Are you singing the Skype song?
I was singing the Skype song. Bum, bum, bum. I didn't know, hear what happened before we were connected. How do you do that, Carrington?
Just as I connected, I heard bum, and then I knew you were doing the same thing that I frequently do, nice. Which is sing the Skype song before I push the button.
Nice.
At first, I was like, oh, they changed the Skype Connect tone. I don't like it. Meh. Now I'm singing along with it every time I have a call. So.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory.
How you been?
I've been fantastic. Good. How about you? It's been a while, and you've been, like, traveling again, cruising and stuff.
Yeah, I've been very busy. I have been...
You're a busy boy.
Well, yeah, I've been traveling, doing some travels with the fam, and just busy with little projects. And yesterday was excite because I got a call from these people that I have worked with, and they were just like, you should come get this old retro computer gear. If you don't come take it, we're going to throw it in the recycle. And I went over there. I went over there and got 3 carloads worth of stuff.
Apple. I saw some photos you put on Twitter, and it's like you've got your own KFest garage giveaway. I can't believe the amount of stuff you have and amazing things.
It's amazing amount of stuff. I mean, Apples and Apple IIs and Quadras and 3 complete Next workstations. And
I saw an Atari 800.
There was an Atari 800 and a stack of 6 floppy drives for it. Although so far it looks like only 2 of them work. Just some weird machine. So anyway, that's my last couple of days. It's just been like
pretty cool.
Play with the stuff and find homes for it. So
retro cool.
Yeah. Yes, I. That's what they call me. Retro cool.
That's what we'll call you now.
Excellent. Cool, cool. Yeah. So here we are.
Here we are talking old computers and about to talk about old games.
Old games. Yes, indeed.
Well, I guess first we could talk about old email, because it's been a while, so we've got, like, old feedback.
Excellent. Why don't you read one?
See, I gave myself a segue, and it was unprepared. Ha, 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 ha. Here is one from Andrew. It says, I'm assuming this is all new. We'll find out. Dear listener, if you've heard this before, it's because it's been a while since we recorded, and I don't really always remember what is new email and what isn't. It says, Kevin and Carrington, when I was a kid, my parents bought me Deadline, the C64 version, so no amazing feelings. What if he means feelies there? And didn't the C64 version come with the feelies?
Yes, we have established.
Or does
this
he mean
before,
not great feelings all, because it's the C64, in which maybe. Case I'd agree with
oh,
him.
Oh, so. Yeah, the C64 causes bad feelings.
Bad feelings. Okay, you know what?
Inadequacy compared to the Atari.
I'm totally with it. Anyway, this is as a present. If you remember the beginning of the sentence, imagine it ends with as a present. Unsurprisingly, I never finished it, so it was with some excitement that I saw that you would be playing The Witness, the simplest of Infocom mysteries. At last, I can play along and maybe this time solve one. An hour and one death later, I was finished. It was, I would say, a strange one. Less clockwork feeling than Deadline, but also sparser. Like someone had coded just the main plot and hadn't bothered to fill out the world with red herrings and extraneous details that make a proper mystery. It's simpler than the others, but I'd be hard-pressed to recommend it to newcomers to the genre due to this lack of detail and amount of time you spend waiting for things to happen. My one death came when, having exhausted conversation options, I stood up and was poking around the office as, spoiler, and got to read ahead when you read emails. Yeah. Now, Nordenbert, a game you got to because I've been putting off this email for so long, I have very fond memories of this one, but as I listened to your podcast, I realized that I really only have fond memories of the first parts. I don't care what anyone says, the shoving leopard bowing to the rare old queen will never stop making me giggle. The, I don't know if I can name it, maybe spoilery, puzzle in particular has never made sense to me, and It reminded me, being of it reminded me, sorry, I can read the sentence, and being reminded of it caused me to go digging for the following link. Then he gave us a link, and this is why I want to read the email, because the link is super cool. He says, it's a piece by Bob Bates of Sherlock and Arthur, presented at GDC 97 on designing puzzles, the different types, along with what makes a good puzzle and a bad one. It's occasionally a bit point-and-click oriented, this was 1997 after all, but it's interesting to go through NMB's puzzles, NMB, that's Nordenbert, took me a second, NMB's puzzles, and count just how many of them fall into Bates's bad category. Restore puzzles might be the only type not represented. Thanks for the podcast, hopefully this email wasn't too long, and hopefully you haven't finished Spellbreaker by now. It's notoriously difficult, so I feel I'm probably safe on that count. Anyway, we'll have a link to the thing in the show notes. I read through it. I thought it was really fascinating. I love that kind of stuff where somebody gets to the real meat of what makes a good thing in a game or a good thing in a puzzle versus another one. I don't always agree with the opinions and the things, but I love that kind of article when somebody really dissects a mechanism in the type of games I like. So this is a strong recommend for me for people to follow the link.
Excellent. Very good. Yeah. I forgot to tell you the most exciting thing.
Were you in search of the most exciting thing?
Yes, we're in search of the most exciting thing, and it's aliens. Oops, spoiler.
That's not the answer. I played that game.
When we were in, my family and I were in Boston as part of the trip, the aforementioned traveling, I happened to be there during the, there is a monthly interactive fiction meetup in Boston, and I happened to be there for that week, and it's at MIT, and I got to go, and I got to meet Nick.
My mind be melting.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Mm-hmm. It's good. You could drive to Boston. You could go every month, right? You could drive over the border.
Well, technically, everywhere is driving distance if you have enough time.
You should
yes.
go. It's the Boston Interactive Fiction Meetup, and it is in the office of Nick Montfort, who is just an amazing professor at MIT who does a lot of interesting things with electronic poetry and interactive fiction. And his office was amazing, just filled with like books, and I mean, like every book ever written by a computer is there. And then there was the K-Pro and a couple of Commodore 64s and the Atari 400 and ZX Spectrums and everything. And it was just amazing. And so I went to the meeting, and Andrew Plotkin was there.
Oh my goodness!
Yes, and a bunch of other interesting people whose names I was less familiar with, but got to talk to. And so we had this great meeting, and then afterwards I got to have dinner. Anyone who wanted to can go to dinner. So I had dinner with Nick Montfort, and it was an amazing time. And if you're anywhere near Boston, you should go to these meetings. I'll put a link in the show notes.
As a person with a graduate degree in reading in my mother tongue, you think I'd know a lot of words, but I always hesitate on the difference between jealousy and envy. But whichever is the appropriate one is the one that I'm currently feeling. So I'm either jealous or envious. I either want to be you or have what you have, or I don't know. English is a tough language. I might have to get another degree in it.
And the group is called the People's Republic of Interactive Fiction.
I love everything about this story. That's amazing. That's a great title.
It's very good. And yeah, I had a great time, and it was frankly a highlight of the trip. And we went to the JFK Museum and everything, but interactive fiction, and it was real cool. And there will be pictures up of us at the meeting, but they haven't put them up yet on the blog. So anyway,
there's a thing in Boston that I think is actually from Sweden or something, or like originally, but it's now, there's one in Boston called Bodaborg, something like that, which is kind of like an escape game, but also kind of like a video game. It's more physical, like you're inside it and having to solve puzzles and go through mazes or something. So that's been the thing in whatever it is. It's vaguely appealing enough to me that's been the reason I want to go to Boston or at some point get myself into Boston. So I may want to time that trip, if I ever do take it, to coincide. All the words. I'm going to coincide with this fancy meeting that fancy men go to. So I too can be a fancy lad.
You can,
like
you. You can be super fancy. Anyway, so, oh yes, you should go. Anyone who's in Boston and listens to this podcast should go to that.
So it's just like open to the public? You can just drop by? You don't have to be a fancy Kevin Savitz kind of guy?
Anyone, nice. Anyone can go. Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I'm going to read that one. Let's see. Oh, this one's good. This one's good. David Schumann. I don't think we've read this one. I'm pretty sure it's still starred.
Who knows?
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure we haven't read this one. You stop me if you've heard this before.
Oh, I'll stop you.
David Schumann. Hi, guys. I was gratified to hear you give Nord and Bert the thrashing it deserved. Wow. I was a 15-year-old beta tester for Infocom in 1987, and this abomination was the first, and as it happened, the last, project they sent me to evaluate. My reaction to this so-called game was the same as yours. What is this? First of all, it wasn't a text adventure at all. It was more like some kind of fifth-grade class project written in BASIC. 10, print ridiculous description. 20, input move string. 30, if move string equals stupid pun, then print, you win. Second, I couldn't believe that this asinine crap had come from the same company that had, not long before, published masterpieces like Trinity and A Mind Forever Voyaging. These games were rich and complex and exquisitely written and took a long time to think through. Nord and Bert couldn't make head or tail of it, dumbest name ever, by the way, was completely the opposite, shallow, witless, and way too easy when it wasn't pointlessly hard.
They could have called it The Witless.
Only days after receiving this game from Infocom, I got a phone call from them saying, "We need your final comments now." Apparently, the test deadline had been drastically accelerated and they needed to push the product out the door ASAP. So I expect your theory about Activision is correct. Once they took over, the old way of doing things at Infocom, i.e. taking as long as you have to get things, as long as you have to get things right, was history. It didn't surprise me when, in the blink of an eye, Infocom's new masters piloted the company nose down to the ground. One cool thing emerged from my brief stint as an Infocom beta tester. They sent me a free copy of Spellbreaker, which, of course, is an awesome game that kept me busy for months. Keep up the fine work, and please review A Mind Forever Voyaging soon. Yeah, and then...
I thought we were harsh about that game.
Yes, well, you said that.
We had other people, I'm sure people either on Twitter or somewhere, I've had people defend Nord and Bert since we went on about it. It's another time where after the podcast, I felt guilty for saying such negative things.
Well...
I still kind of stand by what I said, but...
No, yeah, I was harsh. But as David wrote in a follow-up email, it's not a critic's job to be nice. It's the critic's job to be fair.
And do I want to be a critic?
Okay. You literally had a podcast where you reviewed movies, and now you have a podcast where you review Infocom games, so...
But we reviewed movies I liked.
I see. Nice. You should read the one about the Spoonerism's reasons one. That's a good one.
Yeah, so you say that like I've got them all in front of me. Spoonerism. Okay. Is it from Jason?
Yeah. It's good.
Okay. Jason Kelly wrote, "Hi, Kevin and Carrington. I never thought twice about the Spoonerisms in the Shake a Tower segment of Nord and Bert, especially the first time I played through it in my youth, and then recently played it again. I agree that many of them seemed weird and forced. Also, turning a stack of a spoiler into a spoilery really isn't a spoonerism, in my opinion, but I just took them in stride with the rest of this weird game. And then, last weekend, I happened to watch a clip from a British game show, Only Connect, which features loads of puzzles and trivia. This particular round slowly revealed examples of a certain category, and the contestants had to guess the category. When Blushing Crow and Well-Boiled Icicle were revealed, I knew the category and also marveled at the use of these specific spoonerisms from an old Infocom game. So I did a little research and was astonished to learn that many of the spoonerisms used in Shake a Tower, including that very title, were actually attributed to Reverend Spooner himself. Below is a link with what might be some familiar phrases, some from the game. It doesn't make the game any better, of course, but at least now you know where some of the weirder spoonerisms came from. So these are like the officialist spoonerisms, which I think I kind of knew. Maybe? I think.
I definitely did not.
Yeah, the Dear Old Queen one I knew.
I also didn't know that the person who invented the spoonerism was a reverend, and it seems like maybe you've got a little too much time on your hands as a reverend if you're coming up with spoonerisms. Maybe he had a long walk to his parishioners' homes or something and needed to keep his mind active. I don't know.
Could be. Could be. Mm-hmm. Could be.
Could be. Yep. Let's see.
Oh, we had a couple, two different people write in mm-hmm. about games they've produced.
Yes.
In fact,
yes.
two different emails from multiple people. Mm-hmm. So Peter and Saba wrote us about an adventure game they've produced. They said, "Hello, Kevin and Carrington. We are a big fan of the podcast and also retro maniacs from Hungary. And we decided to make a game based on one of our favorite genres from the 1980s, the fighting fantasy books. We would like to present our interactive fiction / game book, Saving Mikey, to you. Help Mikey survive the infected zone and reach the safe area." So we'll have a link in the show notes. It's available for iOS and Android. And here's a quick description from their website. Our concept is simple. Saving Mikey is a choosable path adventure game built on plain text messages from a young boy who went missing in an infected area after Lysa, a very dangerous rabies-like virus started to spread silently. You have to help him survive and reach the safe zone by telling him what to do when he faces different situations and threats during his journey. We mix the classic road trip in an apocalyptic world genre with our all-time favorites, the interactive fighting fantasy books from the 1980s. So that's pretty cool. And then also Lucas wrote in to say, "Hey guys, I love the podcast and grew up on Text Adventures. Our indie studio just released a cool, fully produced IF that I thought you'd enjoy." And he gave us a link. It's a game called 57 Degrees North. And I like that the company in the URL is Mighty Coconut. So it's mightycoconut.com, which is awesome. And here the description is, when two cousins are shipwrecked on a remote island in Alaska, it's up to you to help them survive, escape, and maybe even discover why there are so many security cameras out here in the middle of nowhere, which is a super intriguing beginning there. So we'll have links to both these games, and I think it's pretty awesome. Nice. I love that people are making games, especially text adventure things or retro-inspired stuff. I love it. Love it, love it, love it.
It's very good. It is very mm-hmm. good. A person whose name I am going to call Tor Borgen Anderson.
Torborgen. How's it spelled?
He's got an umlaut in his name and a J cool. and a B, and it's Swedish.
So I'm going to guess it's Torbjörn.
Torbjörn.
Maybe get right in and see if I got it right.
Hello, Torbjörn. I recently came across Torbjörn. By a group podcast and have been making my way through the episodes. I just finished the bureaucracy one, and so far I'm really enjoying them. I'm skipping the one on Thimblebeed Park because I want to play that one first.
Valid.
Mm-hmm. Since English is, it's also valid to skip them all. That's perfectly good times. Mm-hmm. Good times, ever.
Heck, stop listening now.
Mm-hmm. Bye. Since English isn't my first language, I thought it was particularly interesting that you mentioned that you too have learned new words from playing them. You see, I'm from Sweden, so naturally English isn't my first language, and I think I learned quite a bit from playing these games. I know I spent much more time doing that than doing actual English homework, and I still got high grades. I remember thinking at the time that these games really should really be used for education and not just fun. I wish I had bought more of them in their original packaging, but they were hard to find. I had to order most of mine from the United States, which back then was no picnic. I couldn't afford to buy them all at once, and of course I didn't know that Infocom would be gone a few years later. The strangest word I learned from an Infocom game is probably chirality from Trinity, one of the first games I bought. But what made me think back of it was one of you mentioned learning the word noisome from bureaucracy, because I learned that word from an Infocom game too. Except in my case, it was from Enchanter, and I still remember how. Junction. The corridor widens here to form a large hall. To the north and south are small passages, and to the east is what appears to be an enormous spiral staircase. A passage to the west leads to the courtyard. The walls here are scarred and black, and a strange heaviness hangs in the air. He types, "Examine wall. The wall is stained and noisome. Listen to wall. That's noisome, not noisy."
Very good. It sounds like it smells bad.
Well, that's what I get for not keeping a dictionary nearby. Great. Thank you for that. That's super interesting. And then, it was good.
That is really interesting. I mean, Infocom games are great for that. Like, I've learned words from them as well. It's like just the imps clearly had fun with the vocabulary often. Yes. So it's one of the things I do like about the games. We also got an email. I didn't write down who this is from. Mm-hmm. Somebody sent us a link with stuff about how to beat Infocom games. I wonder if I can find it.
Oh, yeah, I should know how to do that. Matthew Ruley said, I was surfing the internet and found this old magazine with an article about beating Infocom. Thought you guys might enjoy. Well, why didn't you send this to us 2 years ago?
No, because it's full of spoilers. Did you look at the article?
No, I looked at the pretty art, and that was it. It's from Computer Games, Volume 3, Number 5, February 1985.
There is pretty art. So it's How to Beat Infocom, Top Tips to Whip Zork Deadline and 7 More All-Text Adventures. So I looked at it. There is basically a couple of paragraphs at the beginning with general tips and then one paragraph each for the various games. Mm-hmm. I skipped the one about Planetfall because we haven't got there yet, but I read the other ones. It has the summaries of each game, really more than tips for the most part. There's be like also a brief mention of the game's goal, which itself is kind of spoilery. So I was glad to have played the games before reading these. So we'll have the link in the show notes. But if you do go there, realize it's like even just reading these can be kind of spoilery. Like it'll have tips like make sure you keep thing X with you and stuff like that. Like, so it's not giving away puzzle answers the way we do after our spoiler fence, but gives you hints that it's kind of like reading the first three things from an InvisiClues, like some serious, especially in like the paragraph about Deadline the Witness gives some seriously spoilery hints in that. But there's an interesting bit at the beginning that I copied out, which is not too positive. It's kind of strangely negative for something this early in Infocom, when I thought everybody loved this stuff. It says, the parser is basically the player's input into the game. The Infocom parser understands 600 words or more. Regardless of what you may read, the full sentence parser is mostly hype. You'll save time and effort if you think of the Infocom parser as just a two-word parser with frills. Try to keep your phrases as simple as possible, but feel free to experiment with vocabulary. Remember that part of the object of the game is to guess exactly what action the author had written into the game and wants you to figure out. Which seemed like a strange take on it.
I
mean, that said, I do frequently type one and two word commands. I often type, you know, get lamp, though actually I type it as take lamp because, you know, I'm not a barbarian. But you know what I mean? Like, so I usually leave off the articles. I rarely will type, you know, open the door. I'll just type open door.
Right.
So maybe I don't know, maybe I'm being all hypocritical. But
I think there's times, though, when you absolutely have to use... You can't always, two words doesn't always get you by in these games. You need
some adjectives.
Open the mahogany door. Sometimes you need to search the cabinet carefully. Otherwise, you're not going to win the game. So, it's not.
Mahogany doors. Any game has mahogany doors in it.
I don't know. So I have one more piece of mail that I have that I think we should.
Do it.
Okay. From Karen Hales. She says, hi, Kevin and Carrington. Again, hi again, Kevin and Carrington. I usually agree with your assessments. Uh-oh. I don't like that. Starting. Thank you for writing in, Karen. Hi again, Kevin and Carrington. I usually agree with your assessments, but I was sad you hated Nord and Burt so much. Yes, it has a number of problems with implementation, and some of the puzzles are weak, but for a true wordplay lover, it was still fun. There are probably other word nerds among your listeners who would enjoy it too, in spite of the shortcomings. In my view, the silliness and forced/contrived nature of the some wordplay puzzles is an intrinsic part of the premise. How often will the Spoonerism version of a phrase be something that doesn't seem forced? I know it's not accessible to non-English speakers, but if wordplay is the focus, there's no way around that. Having to use hints because I don't know all the idioms didn't bother me. I get that people have different preferences, but I'm still compelled, in the spirit of friendly argument, to debate which game should end up at the bottom of the rankings. You put Nord and Burt far below anything else, but seriously, what about Cutthroats? You didn't like that either, but were more charitable towards its weaknesses. She expects us to be self-consistent, Carrington.
She also makes a really good point, if I remember at the end of this email, that made me think she's right and I'm wrong.
Yeah? What did she say?
Yeah, that Cutthroats is basically a big old dude bro party.
Yeah. It's
true. And I hated that about that game.
Yeah. And she mentioned the trudging around waiting for things to happen in that game, doing errands in that game, which we totally complained about.
I think it's that I am not consistent. I'd like to say I contain multiples, but it's just I'm a big hypocrite. And
you're like seven times seven?
I think it's that... Well, exactly. I think Nord and Burt was just, it was fresher in my mind. And probably when we get to the end of the journey of all the Infocom games, yeah, and I look back at them a little more dispassionately, a little more removed, mm-hmm, and maybe kind of look over my notes, I'll see. But yeah, I think even just her reminding me of Cutthroats made me think, oh yeah, Cutthroats was worse. I really didn't like Cutthroats.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll just also easily manipulate it.
Maybe.
I think maybe so. Whoever writes it next to tell me a game is worse, I'm like, yeah, you're right too. but in this case, I think she's totally right. And I did just absolutely dislike the dude broness of and the waiting around doing nothing business,
yeah,
of Cutthroats. Cutthroats was not fun.
I just want to finish off your email. I skipped it a little bit. In Nordenberg, you get rapid fire wordplay puzzles with almost every turn, and the unconventional navigation keeps it even quicker. If you're in the right mindset, it makes you laugh multiple times. It's definitely not a typical adventure and wasn't intended to be. It's not the best of games, but it's worthwhile, at least for some folks. Regarding the title, the intro to the game does mention two farmers who couldn't make head or tail of it, but I have no idea where the names Nord and Bert came from. Anyone know? That's a good question.
Not me. That is a very good question. Yeah. Because it's not in the game, and I didn't find a spoonerism or anything about it, although I didn't research too hard on the title.
Right.
It's weird. Like, I wonder if, does it unscramble to something?
I tried anagramming it to see, and nothing came obvious to mind, so I don't know. Is that it for mail?
That's it. Okay. That's enough. That's tons of mail.
Yeah, it's got a lot of mail. Thank you for writing in, people.
Let's talk game.
Game. Do you believe, Carrington, that
I don't believe Carrington.
No. Do you believe that the flapping of a butterfly's wing in Brazil can set off a series of events that cause a tornado in Texas?
I'm going to go with no.
Okay.
I mean, yes, totally. Yeah,
I don't know.
I guess it depends on the size of the butterfly. With a large enough butterfly, like a Godzilla monster kind of butterfly, then absolutely.
That's true. Oh, they never said that. It could be... Yeah. Oh, I like how you think. Well, we played a game about a butterfly.
We played a game about a butterfly?
Yep. Infocom's butterfly game.
It was released in 1984. Mm-hmm. So it kind of comes between Sea Stalker and Cutthroats. So is it better than Cutthroats?
That's in a nadir of badness then. It's just exactly. Like, oh.
And so where they were thinking, more ship things, more water. How about a butterfly? Things got a little crazy in the summer of 1984 in Infocom, apparently.
I think that Catch a Butterfly is probably better than Cutthroats.
Well, Karen will write it and tell us why we're wrong.
Right. She might.
So there are not a lot. There's not a lot to do in the game.
Yeah.
There's three rooms. Mm-hmm. So it's an Infocom game with three rooms.
Yeah.
We played an Infocom game recently that only had 7 points. That's true, I guess maybe they're just getting a little crazy. Now, it could have been that these were massive, you know, giant butterfly-sized rooms. But I got the feeling from the description that they were just like rooms.
Right.
Especially since one of them is a closet.
I've played a few pieces of modern interactive fiction that are one-room games. One of my favorites is Violet. It's a just fantastic game. I don't remember who it's by. But it's a one-room game. And there's a lot of games like that. There's another game called The Isle, or Isle, A-I-S-L-E, which is a one-move game. They weren't quite there, but having a very small, constrained play area, Infocom was trying something new, I think.
What do you think they were trying to do with it, though? I think what they were trying to do, mm-hmm, is teach people how to play their games.
You think so? Oh, maybe.
I do think so.
That might have been it.
Yes.
That might have been it indeed.
Or they really just really want to catch a butterfly. Because that is the goal here.
That is the goal.
Catch the butterfly. Were you successful?
I was. I managed to catch the butterfly. I got all the points and caught all the butterflies. How about you?
I caught one butterfly.
Oh yeah, sure. Well, all the butterflies. Were
See, maybe I was less successful than I thought. I did catch one butterfly.
Nice.
I was able to solve that puzzle. Me.
So, yeah, another thing, I mean, I liked about this game, like we said, it was very small, and is that like, the goal is, sometimes you play these games, and you're just like wandering around, and you really don't know what the goal of the game is, right? We played many games like that. Maybe
almost everyone.
Yeah, I mean, well, some of, you know,
each game where I'll be walking around going, what am I supposed to do next?
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes it's super clear, like get all the treasure, and sometimes it's like more vague and just like, why am I here? What am I supposed to accomplish? Mm-hmm. And that is not a problem with this game.
It's not a problem. You are told very clearly what you're supposed to do.
Right.
Your hand is held for you in the first few moves.
Yes.
Where basically you're not given a choice. The game tells you what to do. Mm-hmm. And if you try to do something else, it'll say, no, why don't you just do the thing I told you?
Right.
So I think like the first three or four moves, you're told what you have to do. It makes you type them. And then it goes on. And then it comments that you did a good job when you typed.
Typing what I told you to type. Right.
Yeah. Tells you to type look. Won't let you do anything else till you type look. It says, hey, great job typing look.
Is this mode available for other Infocom games? Because I could really use it for Spellbreaker.
Wait, this wasn't Spellbreaker?
This was not.
No wonder all the spells I typed didn't work.
Yeah.
So there are, we frequently talk about like how many objects there are in a game,
yeah,
and how many ways to die, sure, is one of our new ones. Sure. I don't know if you have those kind of numbers.
Okay.
I think there are like 4 objects in this game.
I guess about right. So they're oddly...
so not a lot of objects.
There's not a lot of objects. So there's there are 3 rooms in this game. I know that. And I know that there are 0 ways to die. Now these are...
Oh, I tried. I really tried. Mm-hmm. I tried to do everything. Right. I just started going off the rails to try to do things wrong. Yeah. It will not let you destroy things.
Choke self.
It will not let you die. Totally. Yeah. I tried to light things on fire. I tried to kick things over. Oh. I tried throwing the lantern at the butterfly. It just won't let you.
No, it really doesn't.
This game had my number.
I worked so hard to find bugs in this game. I'm just like, what isn't it expecting people to do? So yeah, 3 rooms. 81 is average for an Infocom game, so pretty small.
So a little below average.
Yeah, a little below average. 0 ways to die, where 30 is average for an Infocom game. And the vocabulary and number of objects are... no one seems to have put those in the stats, because this is one of the lesser played Infocom games, I would say, lesser known, and the typical stats that are out there, no one has run the numbers on this game, oddly. But I would say the vocabulary is probably typical. Maybe it's 100, less than typical, 100 words maybe. And objects, I think 4 or 5.
I think it's 600 word vocabulary,
yeah,
but that parser is all hype. I know is there's a net, and there's a key, mm-hmm, and there's a sign, and there's a lantern, yes, and there's a butterfly. So I guess maybe there's 5
and
objects.
There's 2 doors.
A mahogany door is one of them.
Yes, I mentioned that earlier.
Yes, you did. Yeah. Kind of game is a mahogany door? This kind of game has a mahogany door. Sure, why not?
This game is believed to, generally credited to Mark Blank, one of the co-founders of Infocom.
Okay, I did not know that. I was wondering, because there was nothing in the game that could tell me who wrote it.
The game doesn't say, actually, but the Infocom fact sheet says Mark Blank, and another blog that I read said it was probably Mark Blank, so I'm calling it.
Okay, because a lot of times in these games, you can find a thing. Like in Zork, you find the little pamphlet. You can read stuff, and it'll tell you about the game. Like, here's the title, here's the copyright, the version number, something. There's always this thing. Not always, but it seems to be this thing, and I generally look for it. It's fun to find that. Mm-hmm. I don't think it exists here. You can't take the sign. I tried looking under stuff. I could not find a thing.
Reading the butterfly, it's not.
Oh, I didn't try that. That would have been funny.
So Mark Blank, 1984, and also I am reasonably sure this is was the least expensive Infocom game ever released. It was initially when it came out only $7.95.
I think initially when it came out it was free. I'm going to disagree with you.
Mm, really?
I think the second time it came out, it was minus 5 cents, and the first time it came out, it was free. And I'm gonna make these arguments for you now.
I think you're probably right.
Here's the thing.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Yes, so this was released on part of the 4-in-1 Infocom sampler.
What?
That contained
what?
Infidel, Planetfall, Zork 1. A transcript of The Witness and this thing. And before that was what was sold for $7.95.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But really it was sold for minus 5 cents, because it was $7.95 to buy it and you got an $8 coupon off another Infocom game.
Right.
So I wonder if anybody gamed the system by buying this so they could take advantage of the 5 cent savings. Because really, you buy this thing and then another game, it's going to cost you 5 cents less than if you don't buy this thing. So that kind of made sense to me. This was talked about in the New York Times.
Yes.
For summer 1984. So volume 3, number 3. And so I found the ad, and there's both a column of text that talks about it, and there's an ad, like a display ad, and I think they're talking about two different things. It's kind of weird, because in the column of text, it talks about how Infocom Sampler, it says this, do you know someone who would love interactive fiction if they would only try it? Infocom has the answer, the 4-in-1 sampler, including excerpts from 4 genres, The Witness, Mystery, Infidel, Tales of Adventure, Planetfall, Science Fiction, and Zork 1, Fantasy. We have found that 9 out of 10 people who try Infocom interactive fiction love it. And because of this, we are able to make an offer that no one can refuse. The sampler retails for $7.95 and comes with a money-back guarantee. If the buyer decides he is not interested, he can send it back for a full refund. If he wants more, there's a coupon enclosed that entitles him to an $8 rebate on a purchase of any Infocom title. He can't lose. There's no mention in this column of what offers are available for non-male purchasers, but whatever.
He or she or they can't lose.
He or she or they are it. So that's this. But then the display ad, which has these big roughly scratched letters that read, try the free Zork demo, I dare you. And then there's this sketch of a hairy hand with a long claw etching an underline. Wow. And then the rest of the text reads, the next time you walk into our store, you'll be in for a life and death struggle because the free demo for Zork 1, Infocom's best-selling underground classic, awaits you. You'll get a taste of exploring the mysteries and dangers of an incredible subterranean world. You'll experience firsthand how Infocom's interactive fiction is revolutionizing computerized entertainment by actually putting you inside the stories that grow out of your actions. And you'll live to tell the tale of the great underground empire of Zork, but only if you survive your battle with me. It's kind of odd that it says when you walk into our store. So I don't know if this is supposed to be a thing that you cut out and display.
Maybe this was a ad copy that a store could steal and use in there.
I think so. Yeah, because there's this
like cut file thing.
The butterfly thing we're talking about appeared on the Infocom sampler, but there's also the Zork demo disc,
right? Which was only available to computer stores. To run in computer stores. So this was
just a thing, not a sold thing. So that's the free thing.
That's true.
That stores would get. And I think that's what the display ad is about.
Yeah.
There is, it's funny, I found an old Usenet fac from rec.games.intfiction. And the fac was split into three parts because Usenet. And part two had among its list of hard to find and early products, the Infocom sampler, pre-1984, This was the first of three demo products written by Infocom containing, we think, excerpts from Zork 1. The existence of this sampler is deduced mainly because of a later version of the sampler has serial number ID2, suggesting an earlier ID1. In fact, the fact I should mention, we'll have a link to the fact because the fact is a really fun read. It's written in the style of an Infocom game itself in which you die frequently while you're reading it and you're interacting with Ford Prefect and the guide from Hitchhikers. And it's super, super fun. So I'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, let's see.
So as far as I can tell, like from reading this, I don't know the history of this, but I'm pretty sure there's that, like you're saying, there's the first ID1 sampler, which is just Zork and this butterfly game and the witness transcript. And that's free.
Right.
So I think this game came out twice, once for free, once for minus 5 cents.
I believe you are right. I stand corrected.
Excellent.
This time. Right. So it was released in the demo disc. It was only available to stores. And then the Catch a Butterfly tutorial was released again as part of the Infocom sampler.
This all sounds very, very believable.
Yeah.
So far, this sounds very believable.
Totally, totally believable. Nothing weird about this at all.
Nothing weird about this episode at all, regardless of what the date is.
That's true. You said this. And then just so for completeness, the third version of a sampler disc. The Infocom sampler disc that we're talking about with Infidel
Planetfall, Zork, the Witness, and the Catch a Butterfly tutorial, was replaced in September 1987 or so, and its replacement had Zork 1, Leather Goddesses of Phobos, Trinity, and Wishbringer, and no butterflies.
Leather Goddess of Phobos, you catch something totally different than a butterfly.
Yeah, it's true. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just so bad. Right.
So in this game, this game, butterfly game, that's totally a real thing, the intro text gives you, I think, a great insight. Oh, I've lost all my words. I used to have words. Insight into the mindset of the Infocom imps. I copied down this little bit of text. It says, you indicate your desires within the game by typing English sentences. And again, this is a game that's teaching you how to play games, so it's telling you about the games. A good rule of thumb in determining the kinds of sentences that will be understood is to think of completing the following sentence. I want to... dot, dot, dot. The three dots stand for the words you will type in. You will often want to see the description of the place you're in. You can type look around or simply look to do just that. And so that's interesting because it's like you can imagine in this game a lot of times if somebody's completely new to the vocabulary, the basic concepts of the game, I think that's what they're trying to convey to people. Like you can walk up to a Space Invaders game and kind of get it right away. And I think there was this idea inside Infocom, and maybe correctly so, that people would struggle with the very nature of the game, like understanding like what to do when you see the prompt. And so this is another attempt at explaining that. Like the weird thing though is, so the first command, it wants you to type look. And so it forces you to type look. And it says how, you know, basically always think about this sentence, I want to dot, dot, dot. The second command it makes you type is inventory. So I want to inventory. It's like, so like literally that whole idea of that sentence lasted for one command. Right away, the break. Like, nice going, guys.
See what's in my pockets.
Exactly. So you think, but again, like, so then it should be, I want to know, you would type know what I have on me, or like it doesn't work well. Like it's harder to describe these things with rules of thumb. I think you just got to play them to learn. But I thought it was funny that even them trying to make this basic thing only had it work for one paragraph and then immediately had to break it in the next paragraph.
Yeah. And then there's the butterfly. So yeah, it really walks you through the things you need to do to get the butterfly. Maybe we should save that till after the spoiler fence. And then once you win the game, it is pretty, you know, it's like, yeah, you learned to do some interactive fictioning. Good job. And then
good job. And it will tell you good job.
Yeah,
it frequently gives you feedback. Yeah, that says good
very,
job.
Very positive. Unlike an actual Infocom game, which is like, you're never going to figure this out.
You have died.
Yeah, and then you either get to play, depending on the version, a little bit of Zork 1, or you have your choice from a menu of the other games. I wanted to say also, when you were talking about the kind of the two different versions of this butterfly game, or the two different ways it was available, I mean, there was the in-store demo, and then there was the Infocom sampler. I found a small difference between them that I thought was kind of cute.
Oh, difference between the butterfly games?
Yes.
Oh, neat. I only played the one version. So neat. What's the difference?
Well, I played them both just to try them out.
Boy, look who's got all the time on his
hands.
It takes almost 15 moves to finish this game. Yeah.
So in the store version, it says, flying around the room in graceful arcs is the most beautiful butterfly you have ever seen. Catching it will enhance your reputation as the world's foremost collector of rare butterflies and enable you to finish this tutorial before the store owner throws you out. Okay. I thought it was funny. But in the Infocom sampler version, it leaves out the part about you getting thrown out by the store owner because, you know, you're playing at home or something. Or at the office.
Or at the office.
Getting paid to play interactive fiction.
And I like that there was actually a couple of moments of humor in the game, like the throw you out humor thing. Mm-hmm. I like there's a bit where it tells you you should go east and then you end up in darkness and it says, oh, you might be eaten by a Gru or whatever. And then in parentheses, it says, this illustrates two important points. First, don't believe everything a computer tells you. Second, and then it talks about objects and things. And I like that. Like, I like that kind of idea. It tells you to do a thing, so you do it, and it goes, well, that didn't work, and you shouldn't believe everything I say.
Right. Like when it forces you to do inventory, and you're not holding anything after all.
And sometimes it says, well, you started to get with that, but it was a good idea to check.
Right.
Exactly. So I like that. There was some, for such a teeny tiny little game, there were actually some good writing and moments of humor in it. Which is important if you're trying to introduce people to Infocom, because that's a big part of the appeal for the games for me, is the wit.
Right. Absolutely.
I think there was a butterfly mentioned in Bureaucracy. I wrote that in my notes here. Wasn't there a butterfly also in Bureaucracy? And then I put a question mark. And then on the next line, I put three more question marks.
Wow.
So I don't know if I was intending to fill in more between those question marks, but that's all my notes
said.
There
was a llama.
I have a vague memory of a butterfly in Bureaucracy. Yeah.
There were like ducks or something in Trinity. I don't remember a butterfly.
Oh.
Maybe.
I'd remember if it was a giant one.
That's true. A giant one in Brazil that was screwing up the weather in Texas.
If there was a giant butterfly, it would have probably been in Ballyhoo. It would have taken up two rooms.
That's true. Yep. Pull left wing off butterfly.
go east. Pull right wing off butterfly.
All right. So
I have very little else to say.
Yeah. All right. So does this game hold up?
Yes.
Is this a good?
I have a question. I have a question for you. Yeah. brace yourself. I think it's what you're about to ask. Would you recommend this game for someone who's never played the full game? Is this a good first game?
I think it is. I think
I'm going to say no.
It was designed to be a first Infocom game, and I think it succeeds in that.
100%. I mean, of everything we played, if I had to pick a single Infocom game now, it's almost cheating, but I'm going to pick this one. Of course you should. It takes 5 minutes to play. You'll get the very basic concepts, and then you can immediately dive into a tougher game. So this is a great aperitif.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Good little game. I guess I recommend it, you know, for completionists or someone who's never played Infocom game and is scared.
Yeah, if you're scared, you've been listening to all of our episodes, this might be the one you can just dive in and do it.
Right. Are we going to have a spoiler fence?
Yeah, we should have a spoiler fence.
Okay. Well, in that case, I guess we're not going to pick a next game because we're still working on Spellbreaker.
I am still stuck on Spellbreaker. We both got stuck at one point. I think we were both stuck at the same score too, mm-hmm. weren't we?
Yep.
At some point.
Yeah.
I'm now stuck on a different score. I've been stuck on the same score now for a few weeks.
Yeah.
I've already cheated a couple times, and yet I'm still stuck in this game.
Yeah.
So heads up on Spellbreaker. Spellbreaker is a very hard, very hard game.
Our next episode will be Spellbreaker.
Unless we
never have an episode again, because neither of us could finish Spellbreaker.
Unless there's another sampler out there.
Right. Right, right. Okay. It is time for the spoiler fence. Mm-hmm. Normally, I would do a big song and dance about how you shouldn't go past the spoiler fence, but it's fine. You can do it if you want.
You can do it. Come on. See what it's like. If you never listen past the spoiler fence, this is your chance.
Right. Okay.
Though we are going to spoil the game and I'm going to ruin the puzzle.
Okay.
There's one puzzle, but yes. Okay, we're on the side of the spoiler fence.
We did it. It's still some
So Spellbreaker's ending is not okay. So April Fools.
Yay. April Fools. We reviewed a real game.
A real game. It's not April Fools. Yeah. But we figured if we're going to put out a weird thing in between, we might as well just throw it out on April 1st, right? Right. People would, wait, is this actually a thing? Is this not a thing? It's really a thing. You probably knew it was really a thing. But yes, even though it's April 1st, this is an actual game.
Yes, an actual game.
That was sold for $0 or -$0.05.
That's true. Or $7.95.
Yes, it was sold along with a Sorry Charlie poster.
Yes. And we never really talked about the box and browsies, but it.
I don't think there were any. I mean, well, I guess for the 4-in-1 sampler, there would have been a box.
Yeah, there was kind of a weird little box for the 4-in-1 sampler that doesn't mention this game at all. This game, by the way, as long as we're past the spoiler fence, is not actually at any point called Catch a Butterfly. That's something that we made up in order to make this seem.
I saw this online called Catch a Butterfly. Hmm.
I don't know.
What else are you
called? It's just called The Tutorial.
The Tutorial,
yeah. So, or maybe it's Catch a Butterfly. I don't know. And I found very little about it. You know, look through the Infocom documentation up at archive.org and stuff, and it's hardly mentioned. So,
in the game on the sign, it says butterflies are free. Which I don't know if it's a reference or not, but we could have called the game that instead.
Mm, that's true.
Although by the end of the game, the butterfly is no longer free. I don't know if this is making some sort of social commentary or what. But
wow.
That's true.
So that was a play, I think, from 1970, 71 or so, and then became a movie. Oh. So, but I don't think it referenced that. It's about a dude who lives, he's blind, and he lives at home, and his mother is really controlling, and he has a relationship. It became a Goldie Hawn movie, I think, in like 72 or 73 or something.
That's right. Yeah, 1972. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Did I get it right? Ooh, yeah. It's early. It's Goldie Hawn. It's super. It was clearly early 70s, but I couldn't have been wrong by more than a couple of years.
She is on the poster.
It's not a good movie.
On the poster, she is barely dressed.
Yeah, it's Goldie Hawn. Yeah. My memory is it's not a great film. Mm. Although I think somebody won an Oscar for it, but not her. Like a supporting actor or supporting actress won an Oscar for it. So. Mm. Vague memories of that.
Well, run out and see that if you really want to see it, but don't.
Mm. Mm.
Okay, so what do you want to? What should we say about the butterfly catching? I really tried to trip up this. I mean, like we said before, this game really tries to. It's an Infocom game on rails.
It's totally on rails. I tried to die and mess up, and I couldn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even once you do a thing, like I try to go into the closet. It is dark, and I wait, and I wait, and I wait, and I wait, and I wait. Yeah. Can't even use again. No, I can't. You can't even wait. I had to type look. So I look, and I look, trying to get eaten by the grue. The grue will not show up. Okay. I just crazily wait, or look. No. And then once you leave, it won't let you go back in again. Like, it's like, come on, until you get the lantern, and you have to light it. It really just forces you.
Right.
Go in, experience darkness, come out, take the lantern, light the lantern, go back in.
Right.
Hey, look, you found a net and a key. Like, it forces you to play this correctly. I mean, though mm-hmm. you can lose, which I found
you
interesting.
You can, yes.
The first time I won because it's really obvious, but you can actually lose the game. So that's kind of fun.
Right, yeah, there's a win condition and a lose condition for sure. There's a door. You get into the butterfly room and there's a door. And if you don't close the door, the butterfly flies away and you lose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it gives you a hint about that. Like it's a fair puzzle. It says like, you know, the butterflies are free or whatever, or watch out, the butterfly's moving. It said something that made it really obvious I should shut the door. So the first thing I did was shut the door. And then I played again to see, well, what happens if you don't? And if you don't shut the door, I supposedly as your first move, then the butterfly gets out and you lose. And it doesn't let you like start again because there's no saving in this game.
Right.
So it just lets you lose. It says, well, you don't always win. Now let's move on to more stuff.
Right. Yeah, get used to
teaches you the hard lesson. Infocom.
Get used to not winning Infocom games.
They should have actually made it unwinnable. That would have been great. Like no matter what you do, you lose. But you think you could have won if you just tried a bit harder. That would have been a true Infocom sampler.
If you were just a little smarter.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
There was some stuff I didn't like.
Okay.
I mean, not that it was bad. I think it's a perfectly good game. But there's, let's see, what did I write in my not likes? Light lamp. The shiny brass lantern is now on. Then in parentheses, it gives one of those feedback things. It says, that was a good idea. If you examined the lantern beforehand, you knew for a fact that it wasn't lit. By the way, you could have typed, light the shiny brass lantern, or turn on the brass lantern, or turn the lantern on, etc., to turn it on. The large number of ways expressing your desires greatly... The large number of ways of expressing your desires greatly enhances the playability of Infocom's interactive fiction. And that last bit, like the whole greatly enhances the playability business, yeah. Felt more like a sales pitch.
Yeah, they let the marketing people get a hold of that sentence, I think. I don't know.
Though I do like light the shiny brass lantern. It sounds like something that Bender would say at Futurama. Light my shiny brass lantern. So I like that. I also didn't like there was after you play the game in the Infocom, the one that I played, which was the free sampler thingy. So it's you play the butterfly thing and then you get a non-interactive transcript from the witness. You just kind of read it through and then you get to play a bit of Zork. Mm-hmm. But after the non-interactive transcript where you just read that bit, it says, our commitment to quality in prose and interaction has paid off. Our interactive fiction has received high praise from such varied sources as the New York Times, Time, Discover, the Washington Post, and Electronics Games Magazine, and our titles consistently garner top places in magazine readership polls. This concludes the tutorial, blah, blah, blah. It just seems like, again, like really sales oriented. Like that's not fun to read.
No, like, it's not. But what's the purpose of this? To make you want to get familiar with and then want to buy IF games. So
I guess
what are they supposed to do? I mean,
just make it really fun and make me want to have more.
Yeah. Okay.
It lists the number of machines. I found this interesting. It says, this concludes the tutorial for Infocom's Interactive Fiction. Our games are available for a wide variety of machines, including the Apple II, Atari, Commodore 64, IBM Personal Computer and PC Junior, TI-99/4, DEC Rainbow and DEC Mate, Osborne 1, K-Pro 2, TI Professional, MS-DOS 2.0, CPM 8-inch disk, and TRS-80 Models 1 and 3. So big old list of computers there.
And a big middle finger to the TRS-80 Model 2.
That'll show it. And the 4 wouldn't have been out yet. But it's just interesting to see like the TI Professional. Like, how often does that get mentioned?
Right.
Or the K-Pro 2.
Right. Yeah. This is a fun little thing to play. I liked it.
I dig it too.
Yeah.
I dig it too. I couldn't kill the buffalo.
The buffalo? Don't kill a buffalo.
Oh, didn't you see the buffalo in the fourth room? I could not get eaten by Gru. I could not light things on fire with the lantern.
Yeah.
I could not kill myself or hurt myself in any way, it seems.
Right.
I was able to drop stuff. I couldn't really kick anything. I tried throwing things at the butterfly. It wouldn't let me do that. Like, it just... You come in and you want to mess things up in the way that a normal Infocom game you have to try desperately to avoid, or it'll go, ha, gotcha, you killed yourself. Here, it is just like they've stuck the bumpers up for bowling. Like, it's just,
oh, yeah, exactly.
It really holds your hand.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in a bad way, but
no, I mean,
hardcore different than a normal game.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a couple of moves where it like gives you a little more rain, but really not much. Yeah, the closest thing I found to a bug was I typed butterfly, hello, trying to talk to it.
And, oh, I didn't even try that.
And it said its usual, how about trying something more in line with catching the butterfly? But then it said it twice. How about trying something more in line with catching the butterfly? So that was the...
Because the comma, yes.
Maybe. Sure. Yeah.
Hmm.
So anyway, I thought, okay, I found a little bug because that's my small...
Nice.
Yeah.
Only you would find a bug in this thing. It's probably like 7 lines of code and you still found a bug.
The goal is to find the bug.
You could remake this game as a 10-line basic thing.
I could, yes. But my joke was the butterfly.
Using one of those parsers that's mostly hype.
Yeah, right.
Hype. At the end of the game, there's a post-game description that talks about how there's no pictures in our stories and that they don't translate kind of popular books, interactive fiction. So 2 points about that. First, it sounded a little defensive.
Yeah, a little apology.
So I guess it was, there must have already been like some pro graphics pressure or something.
Right.
Like, but also they go on about how we don't just translate popular books.
Right.
Not too long after this, like one of the most popular games they do is Hitchhikers,
right,
which is basically translating a popular book. So maybe they should have backed away from that statement a little bit and done more of it.
And later they would do Sherlock Holmes and
Shogun.
And Shogun, right. So, yeah. So
I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, like, you can change your mind on basis.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I got. I don't have much about this game, to be honest. Like, it was pretty easy. How many did you get all 50 points?
I got all 50 points. In one of the computer store version, I believe, it doesn't actually give you points.
Ooh.
One of the versions, it just said, you know, you won. Good job.
Good job.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like the kind of game you should get 50 points in, to be honest.
No, that was not a 50-point
butterfly. Go east, go west, take lamp, turn on lamp, go east, take all, go west, read sign, open mahogany door, go south, close mahogany door, catch butterfly with net. Like, bingo. I've just played the game from memory. It's like,
wow.
There ain't that much to this thing. Oh, there would be a look at the beginning. I forgot look in inventory. Tack those on at the start, and there's your 13, 15 moves, whatever it takes. Like,
glad we're past this.
I played it through like four times, so it's pretty easy to memorize. Just because I kept trying to die. There's like, this game will not let me die. The rest of the games won't let me not die.
That's right.
Make up your mind, Infocom.
Yep. True.
Anyway, the thing is, I'm actually going to play it. Like, I guess in a sense, we're being Infocom completionists anyway, yes. So we want to get to everything. And I would say it's not the worst one we've played.
No, it's really not.
By a long measure.
All right. Well, we can't finish this episode because no one has used the word lepidopterology. I can't even say it.
Butterfly studying? Butterfly studying?
Lepidopterology. Butterfly studying. Lepidopter. Yeah, that's the word that I didn't learn, but I got to learn.
Might be a reason I didn't try it.
Trying to pronounce.
All right, we've said the I've said the word now.
You said the word. Just say the word, and we'll end this episode.
Lepidopterology.
Excellent. Well done. Well done. Oh, did you learn any words during this game?
Lepidop. I learned to pronounce sort of lepidopterology.
I learned the word lantern. I don't think I learned anything.
I didn't learn any words from this one.
Mahogany. No, got nothing. Yeah. But I'm not disappointed that we played it, and it was a nice little break from Spellbreaker,
right?
Which is just breaking my brain. Mm. It's so hard. Oh, it's so hard, folks. Yeah. It's such a hard one.
It was hard. I took a break from it because of the 10-line programming contest, but that's over now. So now I'm back into going to be back into.
Problem is, I also have taken a couple weeks off, just kind of letting it sit in my head, and then we took a break and played this game. Mm-hmm. And now I'm worried I'm going to go back to Spellbreaker and forget what I've done and where I am in the game. And I can't even imagine starting over; it'll kill me.
Yeah.
So we'll see if doing a bunch of looks when I restore my game will remind me where I am and what I'm supposed to be trying.
Type a lot of look and a lot of what is in my pocket.
It's going to be a lot of that. So I hope so. Oh, boy. So anyway, we will be back shortly with, or at some point, with Spellbreaker. Unless we just literally never podcast again because the game can't be beaten. It's like, I think that's it. Is that it for the show?
That's it. Thank you for
been
podcasting.
Been an hour. Why not? Yeah. 50 like game. And thank you for podcasting with me. So this has been Eaten by a Gru, the Infocom podcast. If you want, you can send us feedback about this or even longer games at Gru, that's G-R-U-E, at monsterfeet.com, or hit us up on Twitter. He is at Kevin Savitz. I am at Carrington. And if you want other people to sample our podcast, then please give us a nice review on iTunes. The show notes and such can be found at monsterfeet.com. And thanks to MC Frontalot for wrapping us in the warm cocoon of his music. See what I did there? And letting us use his song as our theme tune.
Nice.
And next up, we will play Spellbreaker for real this time. Thanks for podcasting with me, Kevin.
Thank you. Bye.
I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Oh, no. You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
I'm so jealous or slash envious.
You'll let me still. Know. Let me know when you are you a get or take person? Are you a jealousy or envy person?
Clearly both. And the butterflies are free.
Yes.
But not for long. Kevin's here. Slams the door. Backlit. Smoke comes in. Oh no, it's Kevin.
Where's your freedom now, little bug?